Sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 16. The brother of the third Manu, Uttama, was celebrated by the name Tamasa, and he became the fourth Manu. Tamasa had 10 sons, headed by Prithu, Kayadi, Nara, and Ketu. During the reign of Tamasa Manu, among the demigods were the Satyukas, Haris, and Viras. The heavenly king Indra was Trishika. The sages in Saptarshi Dhamma were headed by Jyotir Dhamma. O king, in the Tamasa Manvantar, the sons of Vidriti, who were known as the Vaidritis, also became demigods. Since in course of time the Vedic authority was lost, these demigods, by their own powers, protected the Vedic authority. Srila Prabhupada comments. In the Tamasa Manvantara, there are two kinds of demigods, and one of them was known as Vaidritis. The duty of the demigods is to protect the authority of the Vedas. The word Devata refers to one who carries the authority of the Vedas, whereas Rakshasas are those who defy the Vedic authority. If the authority of the Veda is lost, the entire universe becomes chaotic. Therefore, it is the duty of the demigods, as well as kings and aides of government, to give full protection to the Vedic authority. Otherwise, human society will be in a chaotic condition, in which there cannot be peace or prosperity. Sukadev Goswami continued. Also in this Manvantara, the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, took birth from the womb of Harini, the wife of Harimedha, and he was known as Hari. Hari saved his devotee, Gajendra, the king of the elephants, from the mouth of a crocodile. Verses 31-33. Maharaj Parikit asked about Gajendra's deliverance. King Parikit said, O my lord, Bhadarayani, we wish to hear from you in detail how the king of the elephants, when attacked by a crocodile, was delivered by Hari. Any literature or narration in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uttama Shloka, is described and glorified is certainly great. Pure, glorious, auspicious, and all good. Footnote 7. This is confirmed by Sri Narada in Srimad Bhagavatam 1, 5, 10, and 11. That literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc. of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest, right? So, therefore, Prabhupada's books is there. If people find that there's a fault and they want to change it, then basically, as it said here, then they are not, sung by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So it means there's lacking in purity, there's lacking in honesty. Because these words that are describing, they're describing on the transcendental platform. So that transcendental platform, it does not need to be adjusted to affect the material platform. Right? The material platform changes anyway, so there's no need to adjust for that. That's always going to change. What we want to do is bring about the transcendental position. So that will come by the potency that is invested in it by the great personalities, right? Because it's about the Lord, who's describing the Lord, great personalities, not just ordinary people, right? You know, there's no prayers of you know, the local taxi driver, you know, and he happened to see God go, you know, God got a ride, you know, from him, you know, from 57th down to 33rd, because he was heard that there was some specials down on Canal Street. And so he went down there to, you know, and so then while he was there, then all the different prayers and his realizations. No.
No. Well, 8,400,000 pieces that Krishna appears, this should also be included.
Be a taxi driver. That's if the Lord is saying, but I was just saying for the ordinary guy. Right? You know, like that, yeah. So, the ordinary taxi driver, then he doesn't understand. Right? So that's not the perspective that's being taken. We're taking the perspective of the great sages. Right? And so their presentation, that's then what makes everything work nicely. Right? So therefore there's no need to change it. That's why it mentions, even though imperfectly composed. Right? And Prabhupada, if you notice, in the front of every Bhagavatam, this verse is quoted. It's always on its own page. Right? Why? Because those who are honest, they'll accept it because they understand it's talking about the transcendental position. Right? Those who think it's words that make things happen, those are the svotavadis. They're known as, they're kind of smarter. Right? They're smartas. Because smartas thinks it's the ritual that makes everything work, so therefore the particular words used, that's what makes things happen. Right? But that's not it. You follow the Vedas, things happen. On the material platform, you understand the Vedas in connection with the Lord, you get the transcendental results. So material results come from following the Veda, spiritual results come from worshipping Krishna. So this idea that perfection in words, because they have rituals and you have to exactly do. But the fun part is, the modern smartas are opposed to rules and regulations. At least the Vedic ones. So that becomes very strange. Just like before, Mayavadis, you know, the impersonalists, they were renounced materially. But now they're the sense enjoyers. So that's the Kali Yuga. Everything's mixed up. So the position is that the transcendental literature, it's special on its own because the sages have spoken it. We hear it, we chant it, we try to remember, we give it to others. That way we'll get benefited. Right?
What about editing?
Editing. That's just, you know, to bring it into that particular language. But that's just so that it says grammar so that you know that you said what you wanted to say. But what we're talking about are people, they don't like what is said. You know, so they want to change that. So that means that they're not purified and not honest. Simple.
So some people are afraid that through the editing, the real meaning will disappear. And that's why they want to...
And these people who are worried are editors?
No.
Then how can they say? Because the point is, you know... Then why don't they just listen to the lectures straight? Because they probably can't understand the language or the accent. See, grammar is a science, and it means that it says exactly what you want to say. Right? So, that's why then Jayadvaita Maharaj, he went back and looked at it, what Hayagriva had done. The Hayagriva is a professor, English professor. He took a lot of liberties in the way of poetics, because that was his area. Right? And it sounds good, but sometimes it doesn't always get across the exact meaning. So all he did was go back to the original tapes, and then try to bring that the grammar, you know, was reflected there more properly. So that's why it's sometimes seen, oh, there's some changes. But all it is more exactly saying what Prabhupada is there. Or even sometimes something was misleft. Because Prabhupada mentions that you do according to your realization. So at that point, he didn't catch all those things. So then he goes back and do that. So you would say is that at least the work that Jayadvaita Maharaj did when he redid some of the books was to bring him more closely in line with what the original tapes were. You know, and Prabhupada expected it. Bring it into English as is accepted. You know? And then once it's accepted there, then it'll stay like that. You don't have to change it with time. You know what I'm saying? It's just like In old people are changing Shakespeare or changing this and that. You know, time's changing, so we have to change them. You know what I'm saying? Like that, or, you know, what is it? The prophet, you know? You know, that you must needs something, you know? Yeah. Yeah, so then there'll be translations of the books. But at the same time, is what if as time goes, actually more and more people are Krishna conscious and more people actually appreciate what Prabhupada said. And so then they like that, so then that becomes the language.
Prabhupadarian grammar.
Yeah. What if that happens? You know what I'm saying? But in any case, even if it doesn't, then there'll be translations. Prabhupada said there'll be purports to his purports. So you just have other purports that explain. You know. So, yeah. On the other hand, those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. Right? So it's about what's spoken by the Lord, by the great personalities, that gives pleasure. And what's not, then there isn't any interest. Right? Yeah. Okay, that was where. Ah. Srisuta Goswami said, O Brahmanas, when Pariket Maharaj, who was awaiting impending death, thus requested Sukadeva Goswami to speak, Sukadeva Goswami, encouraged by the king's words, offered respect to the king and spoke with great pleasure in the assembly of the sages who desired to hear him. 31 to 33. Conclusion. The Lord is the creator and proprietor of everything. Right, so that's the point that's trying to be gained in this chapter. Right? So when everything is silent, the Supreme Being stays awake as a witness. The living entity does not know him, but he knows everything. Right? So that's your... Why is it that he's... Because he's there before everything, he's there during, he's there after. And when everything's not functioning, he still is. Right? So you'd have to definitely consider that it possibly belongs to him. Right? Like that, yeah. We have tendency to manufacture many things. One may construct a big skyscraper, but neither the constructor, the merchant, nor the worker can claim proprietorship. Proprietorship belongs to the person who has spent for the building. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has manufactured water, earth, air, fire, and sky. And one can use these and take a salary, tena chaktena bhunjita. However, one cannot claim proprietorship. The entire cosmic manifestation is the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, who has millions of names and unlimited potencies. He is self-effulgent, unborn, and changeless. 10, purport 12? Oh, that's...
It's like verse 10, purport, and maybe it's actually verse 12?
Yeah.
Purport 10. Purport of 10 and the 12 text.
Okay, text of 12 and purport of 10. Okay. So that's the Udaharana. So we're explaining. So means, how do we know he's the proprietor? Because everything's coming from him. Right? The guy who builds the building can't say it's his building. Right? The contractor can't say it's his building. The architect can't say it's his building. The engineer can't say. They get paid. It belongs to the person who supplies the materials. Right? So in the same way, is because everything being built is made out of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then, and that's supplied by the Lord, he's the proprietor of everything. Then, since all property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything should be offered to the Lord, and we should take only prasad, tena chaktena bunjita. Therefore, to enable people to reach the stage of activities that are not tinged by fruit of results, great saints first engage people in fruitive activities. For unless one begins by performing activities as recommended in the Shastras, one cannot reach the stage of liberation or activities that produce no reactions. Okay. So, because people, they're doing these, why claim proprietorship, what would be the reason?
To enjoy.
To enjoy. Right? So that means is that, how you say, there is the point of fruit of activities. Because you don't claim something unless the results coming from it, you can gain something. You have something that doesn't give any results as everybody jumping on, you know, to claim it. No. Something that can produce results, that's what you want. So that's the fruit of aspect. Right? So because people want that, but they have to reach the stage of detachment. So then the process is engaging that fruit of activity connected to the Lord. Right? That's what we're trying to do. Right? So that's what the sages recommend. They don't say, give up the work. They say, do the work, but connect it to the Lord. Right? So that's the whole point. But it has to be work that's recommended by Shastra. Because otherwise, how is it actually detached? Right? I'm detached from something I make up myself. How detached am I? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Children make up their own game for in rules, but then, you know, that they're detached that someone else is winning or this or that. But how detached are they? Right? They're attached to playing. So the whole point is unless you follow what's recommended in scriptures, you can't actually be detached. Right? So this idea that we don't follow all these things because they don't match us as you know, coming from a non-Vedic background. That won't get us to the detached platform. It'll only maintain our attachment. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, one is performing fruit of activities that are recommended, and then that results for the Lord. And then by that process, gradually, we'll give up the attachment to those results. But because we're doing those activities because that's what we're supposed to be doing, we'll be able to continue the activity even though we don't have the attachment. Well, if we make it up, we're attached, we make up something that matches our attachment. If we give up that attachment, we give up the work. Guaranteed. So that's the system. Okay. So only by this process you can get to the platform of being freed from action and reaction, right? Coming to the liberated platform. In spite of acting as a creator and maintainer and annihilator of this material world, the Lord is never entangled. Right? So, but that's the difference. We're involved in the activity, we're entangled. He's involved in the activity, he's not entangled. Right? Because he's beyond that. He has nothing to gain from it. It's only relationship with the living entity that he's arranging so that the living entities are taking part. And even if we think, what is it we're dealing with? There's us, and then there's the fruit of action. In the fruit of action, what are we dealing with? Ourselves or what's outside ourselves? Right? It's things that we consider ourselves. Our body, our family, our house, our country, our whatever it is. You know? Like that? So, then we become attached and we're dependent on that. But for the Lord, is there anything outside of him? No, everything is him. So he's only interacting with himself. So, where's the attachment? Right? We're dealing with the body, we're attached to the body. Are we attached to the soul? No, we're not attached to ourselves. We're attached to the body. Right? So he, because he is everything, so therefore his dealing with himself doesn't generate any attachment. Yes?
Is that the reason why he's called as Atmaram?
Atmaram, yes. He's self-centered because he only deals with himself. Right? So whether he actively deals or doesn't deal, then it's still he's satisfied. Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay. So then the last point here. Hence, devotees who follow in his footsteps are also never entangled. So, because he's working with that which belongs to him, and we follow in the footsteps, which means we also work with that which belongs to him. Not that which belongs to me. That's the point. Is that which belongs to him? Because he's not entangled, then we won't be. Because we're working with things that aren't us. You know, and I mean, how you say, we're working with things that we say are ours, and we're getting entangled. right? He's working with what's him and not getting entangled. So therefore, we have to work with what he works with, which is himself. Then we won't be entangled. So that's the difference between following the footsteps and imitating. Imitating means we try to do what he does and claim it's ours. Following the footsteps means he performs his prescribed duties, what's recommended, you know, connected to the Lord. So we also follow what's recommended, connected to the Lord. Then we, like the Lord, are never entangled. Does that make sense? Yeah?
This is one point I don't understand. If he is, everything belongs to him, he's only working with himself.
Yes.
And he's at the same time, he's not attached.
Yes.
That point I don't understand.
Because it is him. When we're working with the body, is the body us?
No.
So we become attached.
We become attached.
But he's working with his body, and his body is him. That's the point. He's God, of course. That's the point. He's beyond us. He is everything. He is himself. He is the internal potency. He is the external. He is the jiva. They're just different aspects of himself. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, him dealing with himself, how will he be entangled?
Entangled, no, attached.
No, but he is himself. What's there to be attached? Attachment means that there's some dependency.
Difference also.
Yeah, difference. But here, there's the same.
Okay, now I understand.
So therefore, we're acting with something that's different from us,
yes.
But we're becoming attached because we identify it with ourselves.
Yes.
Right? But, therefore, the Lord is doing that and not getting attached, you know, or not being entangled. So we do the things that he does. We connect ourselves with him. Because everything belongs to him. He's the proprietor. Therefore, then we don't get entangled. But if we say it's ours, that's when we get entangled. Because it's not ours, it's his.
Due to the ignorance.
Yes, due to ignorance.
Prisoners.
Yes. Okay? Okay. So that's the 10th verse and 14th and 15th. 10th purport and 14th and 15th verse. Then the conclusion. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is full in knowledge, free from material desires and diversions, and completely independent. As the supreme teacher of human society, he teaches his own way of activities, and thus he inaugurates the real path of religion. I request everyone to follow him. Verse 16. Right? So that's what we're trying to do. What he does in the world, in other words, there's so many things you could do in the world, but what he does, then that is the real path of religion, right? Because religion comes from him. So he's given all these religions, but what he does, that's what we're supposed to follow, right? Because he follows what's recommended in Scripture. Does that make sense? So, like that. So that's what we do. That's the real path of religion. Otherwise, then we'll make up our own path of religion, and there's a good chance it won't get us very far. Right?
Connected to that, also connected to the point you made earlier about being, you know, doing work that's not according to the rules. So when you do work according to Krishna's rules, that's how you get knowledge and detachment.
Right.
But if you're attached to something that's not directly recommended in Scripture, I remember previously you mentioned that by engaging in Christian service, eventually you get, you either regulate it or you could just drop it because you've engaged it in service.
Yes.
So that's still...
Yes, but then what will that bring you to?
To following something.
Yes, so then following. So we may start with Vikarma, but because of connecting it to Krishna, then we'll get there. So either it's being connected by... the thing itself is being offered to Krishna, or by the principles behind it that make it work are being seen in connection to Krishna. Right? So in that way we become purified. Then we come to the actual standard. But the point is to come to that liberated standard, you have to be following the rules. Because why wouldn't you? Why would you maintain attachment to what's improper? Right? I mean, sin may be coming from a conditioning, but we wouldn't maintain our attachment to that. We would maintain our attachment to Krishna. Yes, so just like, let's say, okay, to go to work, then we have to wear a suit. So maybe suit's not technically, you know, what's recommended. But the point is what's the principle of a suit? Why would you wear a suit to work? You fit in with the social norm, and what is that social norm called? What do they call someone who wears a suit?
Gentleman.
A gentleman. Okay, so it's about being a gentleman, not about wearing the suit. But now if we reverse the argument and say that it's about the suit, you know, I'm being a gentleman because I'm wearing a suit, and so it's all about the suit, then that's a very neophyte understanding of this particular philosophy. Because the point is to give up that attachment to that suit. But if we're trying to say, no, wearing the suit, that's fine, we don't have to wear the Vedic, we can wear the suit, then the point's been missed. It's about becoming detached. It's not about rationalizing our attachments. Right? So you have to use this knowledge for higher persons. Otherwise, then basically it becomes bhakti mr. karma, technically. You know, just like daksha. He worships the Supreme Lord to get his material benefits. Right? So anything to be successful has to have bhakti in it. So it's not strange that a devotee would say, you have to do devotional service, but if they're trying to get the material benefits, then the problem comes up is that it's about getting those benefits. It's not actually about bhakti. So then the question comes up, is somebody actually interested in pure devotional service? Or they just find, you know, they're pious enough to appreciate using the element of bhakti to support their non-Vedic lifestyle is actually the point. And then in that, they want to claim that they're a great devotee. But, you know, bhakti mr. karma and karma mr. bhakti are not the same. They may look the same, but they're not the same. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. So if you can't discriminate, then how can we claim that we're advanced? How can we claim this is superior? Because if you look at it, Daksha did consider himself superior to everybody else in the assembly. It says it right there. He came in, he was special, he outshone everybody, and he was very... And when Shiva didn't recognize that, he got very upset. Even though Shiva is the superior person, and may not be following all the etiquettes according to how the materialist thinks things should go. So this is a very good example. Those who oppose the Vedic version are like Daksha. They claim that they're performing things connected to Vishnu. Like when Brahma and Vishnu, he didn't invite to the next yajna. Vishnu could come, but Vishnu didn't come because Brahma and Shiva weren't there. So how is it devotion? So he claims he's a devotee. But we can understand from the text he's not. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that you have to do it as the sages give it, not according to us. Because otherwise, if we want to do it, use our intelligence and be on the Monday path, if we use our own, we'll make mistakes. So at least then you have to follow guys like Gautama, Vaisheshika, Patanjali, Jaimini. At least materially you'll get some benefit, but this other is, I'm not sure if you get any benefit. You know, so at least there, they're following the best within their lines. You know, if you're going to follow materialist, follow the best materialist. But if you make up your own thing and say, well, I'll be the best, you know, it'll work, and it's not going to work. So you either follow, you want the material, follow those who do that. You want the spiritual, follow those who do that. Don't make up your own and pick and choose which like from where. You know, it's not a smorgasbord. Yeah, you know. So it means you there's a system. Yeah? Yeah. Because we have to remember, smorgasbord is a snack, not a meal. It means where it's from, it's a snack. Those who aren't from there think it's a meal. But it's not, it's a snack. You know, Is that okay? Okay. Okay, one of our favorite pages. The next page also is quite a good page. Even this page is a gap on the bottom. Getting good here.
Can satisfy the performance.
Yeah. You can put in so many, you know, make it like, you know, 500 pages, but most of it's blank, you know. Yeah, okay. Okay. Chapter 2, the elephant Gajendra's crisis, Pratigya. In order to keep themselves fit to fight Maya, the devotees must place themselves in a normal condition of life. Adhyaya Prakashika. Now the problem is there's 8,400,000 ideas of what is normal. Right?
Well, like we were talking earlier, there's this transcendentalist definition of normal, and then there's the materialist definition.
Yes. Sorry.
Vidvad and Agya.
Vidvad and Agya. So that was within direct, and then indirect has the same breakdown.
It doesn't mention it.
But I was sure it would be the same.
That's within Mukhya. And then so Mukhya, then Lakshana and Gauna, two aspects of indirect meanings.
Lakshana and Gauna. Oh, okay. Okay, but it would still have how the sages would look at it and how the ordinary people would look at it. Okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. The second, third, and fourth chapters of this canto describe how the Lord, during the reign of the fourth Manu, gave protection to the king of the elephants. As described in the second chapter, when the king of the elephants, along with his female elephants, was enjoying in the water, a crocodile suddenly attacked him, and the elephants surrendered to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead for protection. In the midst of the ocean of milk, there is a very high and beautiful mountain that has an added altitude of 10,000 yojanas, or 80,000 miles. This mountain is known as Trikuta. In a valley of Trikuta, there is a nice garden named Ritumat, which was constructed by Varuna. And in that area, there is a very nice lake. Once the chief of the elephants, along with female elephants, went to enjoy bathing in that lake. And they disturbed the inhabitants of the water. So here is, they're on a heavenly region, but they're still animals. Right? You know, but they're, you know, the best you're going to get. You know, but,
so it means they didn't quite make it something right?
Yeah, in other words, there's a mix between their piety and impiety. So they're pious to get to the heavenly planets, they're impious that they end up as the animals. So. Yeah, you know, it's like a... But to them, they don't even notice the difference. Like that, I think it was a question Bhavananda asked, I think, Srila Prabhupada about that you have the, you know, one of these Indian dogs on the street and everyone's harassing it and it's, you know, living down the Ganga and just eating whatever scraps it can get. And then there's this dog living in somebody's penthouse suite on the Upper East Side. Like that, and eating on the table and wearing cashmere sweaters like this. And so that, what's the difference about the karma? You know, and Prabhupada didn't directly get into the karma. He just says to the dog, it doesn't matter. The dog really couldn't care less. You know, take the same dog off of the penthouse and stick him down there with the other. They'll be fighting over the scraps on the street. So, you know. Yeah, that's the point. That even though it may be part of the point, it's they don't care. So. Because of this, the chief crocodile in that water, who was very powerful, immediately attacked the elephant's leg. Right. So then they're enjoying in the water, making a disturbance, and then so then the chief crocodile gets upset. Thus, there ensued a great fight between the elephant and the crocodile. This fight continued for 1,000 years. Neither the elephant nor the crocodile died, but since they were in the water, the elephant gradually became weak, whereas the power of the crocodile increased more and more. Thus, the crocodile became more encouraged. Right? So that's right, you have to know where your strength and weakness is. Right? No, in other words, don't mess with the crocodiles in the water. On the land, maybe, but in the water, no. Yeah. Then the elephant, being helpless and seeing that there was no other way for his protection, sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses 1 to 19, description of the Trikuta mountain. 20 to 23, the king of the elephants attacked by a crocodile. Verses 1 to 19, description of the Trikuta mountain. Yes, of course. No, because it'll continue on the next chapter. So this one's just setting the scene, you could say. Sugadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, there is a very great mountain called Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated. The length and breadth of the mountain are of the same measurement, 80,000 miles." Right? So then when kids draw mountains as generally a proper triangle, you know, then that's actually more the standard of mountains. Right? So just inherently they... Okay. "Its three principal peaks, which are made of iron, silver, and gold, beautify all directions and the sky. The mountain also has other peaks, which are full of jewels and minerals, and are decorated with nice trees, creepers, and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create a pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty of all directions. The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by waves of milk that produce emeralds all around in the eight directions, north, south, east, west, and the directions midway between them." Srila Prabhupada comments, because the directions are north, south, east, west. Then you have what's in between. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that you have all these directions. No, you have four directions. Then you have all the gradation between. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada comments, "From Srimad Bhagavatam we understand that there are various oceans. Somewhere there is an ocean filled with milk, somewhere an ocean of liquor, an ocean of ghee, an ocean of oil, and an ocean of sweet water. Thus there are different varieties of oceans within the universe. The modern scientists who have only limited experience cannot defy these statements. They cannot give us full information about any planet, even the planet on which we live. From this verse, however, we can understand that if the valleys of some mountains are washed with milk, this produces emeralds. No one has the ability to imitate the activities of material nature as conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Yeah. So that just produces emeralds when the beach is washed with milk. Now, if they knew that, you get those wave machines and get a bunch of sand and put milk in there and then see how long it takes. You get anywhere? Yeah. Okay. So they say they cannot defy these statements. They'll only in their own mind reject them. But they can't scientifically disprove anything. Whatever's here, they can't disprove it. Like that. It may be popular that they therefore accept a certain theory, or not popular, they reject. But they can't disprove this. So they say, oh no, it's not proved by science. But they can't disprove it either. That always has to be kept in mind. Otherwise, you become intimidated by, you know, these false philosophers.
So they basically express their impiety.
Yeah, they express their impiety. They also express their own subjective opinion. And then they use their subjectivity to establish their objectivity. You know, so it's not consistent with supposing to be smart. Like that, yeah. "The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, serpents, Kinaras, and Apsaras, go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets. Because of the resounding vibration of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way." Right, so all that's coming out of the cave and the sound, because it's so strong, the lions in other caves, then they think that another lion is there, and so then they roar. So then that's always fun. So not necessarily fun for the lion, but fun for the, you know, Gandharvas and everybody else. You know, like that. Srila Prabhupada comments, "In the higher planetary systems, there are not only different types of human beings, but also animals like lions and elephants. There are trees, and the land is made of emeralds, such as the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sung in this regard, Keshava Tuya Jagat Vichitra. My Lord, Keshava, your creation is colorful and full of varieties. Geologists, botanists, and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems, but being unable to estimate the varieties on other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets but this one are vacant, uninhabited, and full of dust. Right? So the maximum variety they can get is dust, right? You know, and they're not even... Yeah. Because then you get from variety down to dust, and then you don't worry about the dust. Right? You know, so that's the method. Although they cannot even estimate the varieties existing throughout the universe, they are very proud of their knowledge, and they are accepted as learned by persons of a similar caliber. Right. So within the ordinary, they're considered the intelligent ones. What we have to remember is then there's those on the transcendental platform, the liberated souls. They're a different category. So how they see things, that's the real way of seeing. So right now we're used to it. So we're trying to say is, no, you have to be able to explain the transcendental according to the methods of the ordinary. But the point is the transcendental is beyond the ordinary. The ordinary can't do that. So it's only when the living entity understands that there's something beyond, surrendering to the great personalities takes up the practice of that mentality and understanding, then the Lord, being pleased, reveals that understanding. Because the point is, the transcendental comes from Him. Yes?
That famous astrophysicist, Stephen Hawking, he states that actually we have access only to 10% of reality, and the 90% is just dark matter, dark energy, so you know, he accepts that we don't see the most part of reality.
Yeah. So, he's the coverings of the universe. So even what's not within that 10%, we don't even see. But yeah.
His estimation is way out.
Yeah.
Where we perceive anywhere near 10%.
No. But he's thinking that the 10% of the total, well, like you said, it's way near. So they may get 10% of what is actually perceivable, you know, within the 14 planetary systems. So then when you count... Yeah, I mean, if you count what's outside, it'd be millions. Right?
Yes.
Because if you take, basically you can take, it means once they did a calculation, if the inside of the universe, which is 4 billion miles, right, is the size of a green pea, you know, that we put in a sabji, then the covering on one side would be from here to Krishnagar, to the FRO. So we're talking about, you know, it's extremely small how much is there. So...
10 million times bigger.
So we're dealing with 1/10 millionth. And then that has the 14 planetary systems. And then on one of those, it has 9 different aspects. And on one of those parts of the 9, right, then we're seeing, you know, a ninth of that. And even that we can't figure out. So, yes, so. Yeah. But in that, they don't know why, we can only say that much. Mm. So that's the important thing that's being brought out here. That was in the last thing, because the Lord is there. The variety is coming from the Lord. So when we accept the Lord, then we can appreciate the variety. Like, we can appreciate more variety than the scientists can. Because they don't know about these other species of life and this and that. You know, the higher ones. Maybe they know more of the lower ones, but, you know, who needs to know them? You know, you see an enemy that can bite your toe off. It's like, we don't need to know. You know, just wear your shoes, don't worry about it. Right? Yeah? Okay. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:19, Svavid, Vara, Hoshtra, Karaihi, Samstuta, Purusha, Pashu. Materialistic leaders are praised by dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Okay. Yeah. Didn't mention gentlemen, did it? Okay. And they themselves are also big animals. One should not be satisfied with the knowledge imparted by a big animal. Rather, one must make knowledge from a perfect person like Sugadev Goswami. Mahajano yena gata sapantaha. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 17:186. Our duty is to follow the instruction of the Mahajanas. There are 12 Mahajanas, and Sukadev Goswami is one of them. Swayambhur Narada Shambhu. Oh, continuing the purport. Kumara Kapilo Manuhu. Prahlado Janako Bhishmo. Balir Vyasakir Vayam. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.20. Vyasaki is Sukadev Goswami. Whatever he says, we consider to be factual. That is perfect knowledge. Sukadev Goswami continued. So we bring that, what we hear, then with contemplation and our practice, then we try to see that in the ordinary world. Right? Because then when we do that consistently, then we are never seeing the ordinary world. We're always seeing the Lord. We'll always see things in the transcendental plane, yes.
It's very common when the devotees surrender initially to the movement that they say that one moment it's so impossible to think of a boy lifting a mountain or of this incarnation. But as soon as the inconceivable element was accepted, then what would that be a premise to get into those accepting the body?
Yes, yes. It means the point is when we accept that what he says is true, then the Lord will reveal how it's true. But if we don't accept, it can't be, and all these things are inconsistent, or how can we do that, or the Vedic culture can't work now, or, we can't deal like this, or no intelligent person will accept this stuff, then the Lord will never reveal. So, yes, you try to explain it to people, they don't accept. Why? Because you don't accept it. So Krishna doesn't give the intelligence to explain it. Because the point is that that's not the discussion. Right? That's really not the discussion. Does that make sense? So that's the problem. We have problems in relationships with people because we don't actually discuss the real topic. We discuss externals as symptoms of it. And because the symptoms don't match with how we think the symptoms should, we can't properly interact on a proper platform. So that's why the Vedic is always trying to shift it to what's the actual topic. So it's not actually about all these things and the Gandharvas and that. What are we supposed to gain by this? You have a mountain that's 88,000 miles high and wide. It's got three peaks, one gold, one silver, and one iron. Right? So this doesn't mean, even if it's iron ore, but from here it appears that it's, because it makes the place brilliant, that it's actually solid. Right? We're impressed if we have a little chunk of gold. A little dinky chunk. This is a mountain. It's 88 yojan is high. So how much is the peak, right? You go to the Himalayas, Dalgiri, Nilgiri, those kind of mountains. 12,000 feet, then the trees stop, right? No, they go higher. About 16,000 they stop. Then you have the rock above that, and the rock's huge. So that's what it means. You have all the things, the vegetation up to a point, and then there's the rock. Right, so and here the rock is solid gold or solid, silver or solid iron. Then because it's such a nice place in the valleys and all the ocean, milk ocean and all the emeralds and everything's like that, and it's all beautiful. Then who's coming there? Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, the Charanas, the Siddhas. This all group was mentioned as the ones in the mode of passion. Right, you had the divine them there. So what's the demoniac? Not that they're, going around and eating people and all that, It's that they are not seeing things in connection to the Lord. That's the demoniac mentality. So they are, the antarikshawalas are into sense gratification. That's what makes the demoniac. Right? So they're appreciating the variety, the wonderfulness of it, because they already have their own planets. Why come here? Right? Means you have where you live, which you make as nice as possible, but where do you go for vacation?
Somewhere.
Somebody who is better than what you got. Right? Like that. So they're going to something better. So what's the whole point of this discussion? Because we could say, oh, but this is all mundane and they're just enjoying it. But what's the point?
I was trying to bring the story of Gajendra's surrender to the Lord.
Yeah, no, that's there, showing the background. It'll be doing that. But what's the point we can gain from this? Bhaktivinoda Thakur made the point.
But even in such a good place, there is suffering?
No. The one meaning that all the variety, the amazing variety in the universe is just the creation of the Lord. So that means if He's creating this, then how special is He? You know? That's the whole point, is that the Bhagavatam's expressing all these things because then it shows how special the Lord is. You know, you have all these amazing places, and why are they? Because it's the Lord. So if this, and this is just a very small part of the Lord's creation, then how special is the spiritual world? Is that something? Yeah. So that's the way it's getting. So all these descriptions are just to point out how nice things are. We have a context of what's really nice, and then when these same things are there in the spiritual world, we'll know that they're of the superior quality, of that they're of the transcendental nature. Okay. Okay, Sukadeva Goswami continued. The valleys below Trikuta Mountain are beautifully decorated with many varieties of jungle animals. And in the trees, which are maintained in gardens by the demigods, varieties of birds chirp with sweet voices. So there's gardens that are there within. So you have the forest, which has all that. Then you'll have gardens, which means it's being maintained. So different demigods are making some nice gardens there, places to walk and this and that. So you won't have all the wild animals. You don't have to worry about, you don't. In other words, these different demigods, when they come down there, they don't have to bring their machete with them. You know, to hack through and stuff like that. And, you know, no mosquitoes. You know, it's yeah, you don't have that one.
Paradise.
Yeah. Trikuta Mountain has many lakes and rivers, with beaches covered by small gems resembling grains of sand. The water is as clear as crystal, and when the demigod damsels bathe in it, their bodies lend fragrance to the water and the breeze, thus enriching the atmosphere. In the valley of Trikuta Mountain, there was a garden named Ritumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna, and was a sporting place for the damsels of the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were mandaras, parijatas, patalas, ashokas, champakas, chutas, pialas, panasas, mangoes, amratakas, karamukas, coconut trees, date trees, and pomegranates. It's amazing, we only know a couple of them, right? And we'll consider those the best, right?
Yes.
You know, like that. There were madhukas, palm trees, tamals, asanas, arjunas, arishtas, udumbaras, plakshas, banyan trees, kimsukas, and sandalwood trees. There were badaris, akshas, abhayas, and amlakis. In that garden was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers, and the flowers known as Kumunda, Kalahara, Utpala, and Satapatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also bilva, kapita, jambira, balataka trees. Intoxicated bumblebees drank honey and hummed with the chirping of the birds, whose songs were very melodious. The lake was crowded with swans, right? So very melodious ones that you have the water birds, they always have very kind of more unique and melodious sounds. They always have their own kind of category of singing. And then the other birds means that they must be eating all these fruits and flowers and stuff like that, so their voices are very nice. So depending upon what the bird eats, they have a good or not good voice. Right? So the ones that are very, very, very musical, then they mean that they're eating, you know, how you say, you know, fruits, flowers, that kind of stuff, grain. The ones that have not very nice voices means that they're eating all kinds of nonsense. You know, so like crows, yeah, they just eat straight garbage, right? You know, so they have the worst. You know? Them, I think vultures aren't very attractive, you know, stuff like this. Does that make sense? So it just means, yeah, very pious, you know, even the animals here are very pious, right? The trees are pious, the place is pious, the animals are pious. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the trees that is mentioned over here is Audumbar. It's a very pious tree in the sense, like just we finished with the Canto 7, Narasimha Leela. So like after Narasimha, he killed Hiranyakashipu. So it's just a pastime, like a folk tale kind of a thing, you know, that his hands were burning, and that's the reason why he pierced his hands, you know, his nails in this Audumbar tree, and that gave him, you know, the coolness effect. That's why this has been worshipped all over India.
Oh, okay.
Something like figit looks like the fruit of it.
Yeah. No, well, it's a kind of fig. It's just that it's not necessarily the kind of figs that we'd be eating. No. Like that. It means you can, Bengalis will take them and while they're green, cut them and make sabjis out of them. But even nowadays, I don't even know if anybody does that.
What's
the name? Udumbra. It's one of the kind of banyan trees. Because banyans are fig trees. Like that. So it's just. Yeah, they're called fig. They're in the same family. It's just that some give more fruit, kind of, that we eat figs, and some give less. Right. The lake was crowded with swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and flocks of water chickens, datyuhas, koyashtis, and other murmuring birds. Because of the agitating movements of the fish and tortoises, the water was decorated with pollen that had fallen from the lotus flowers. The lake was surrounded by, so, because they always move around, you know, and through there, the lotus flowers, so the lotus flowers move, so then the pollen falls out, and then you have that pollen, because it's very light, it floats on the water. So you have that, like, golden color on the water. You know? The lake was surrounded by kadamba flowers, vetasa flowers, nalas, nipas, manjulakas, kundas, kurubakas, ashokas, shirashas, kutajas, ingudas, kubjakas, swarnayutis, nagas, punagas, jatis, malikas, satapatras, jalakas, and madhavilatas. The banks were also abundantly endowed with varieties of trees that yielded flowers and fruits in all seasons. Thus the entire mountain stood gorgeously decorated. Srila Prabhupada explains. Judging from the exhaustive description of the lakes and rivers on Trikuta Mountain, on Earth there is no comparison to their super excellence. On other planets, however, there are many such wonders. For instance, we understand that there are 2 million different types of trees, and not all of them are exhibited on Earth. Srimad Bhagavatam presents the total knowledge of the affairs of the universe. It not only describes this universe, it always also takes into account the spiritual world beyond the universe. No one can change the Srimad Bhagavatam's descriptions of the material and spirit. No one can challenge the Srimad Bhagavatam's descriptions of the material and spiritual worlds. The attempts to go from Earth to the Moon have failed, but the people on Earth can understand what exists on other planets. There's no need of imagination. One may take actual knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam and be satisfied. So we want to know, you get it from what the Bhagavatam describes. You don't have to try to go there yourself to figure it out, because it's, you can't do that. It's not qualified. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you see, anything that they do, it works, then what happens? After 6 months, there's something else. And after another, you like that, right? Means Wilbur and Orville, was it? You know, they're down there with their, I'm not sure, balsa wood and some, you know, probably Japanese paper and all that, and they're flying around, and very soon, then the French guys, then they got something, and then I'm not sure if it's Wilbur or Orville, whichever was the lawyer, he spent his whole life trying to, you know, how you say, on court cases because everybody else is stealing their ideas, and then you have the, you know, your planes, and then you have this and that, and then it just keeps going, right? Anything comes out, then if it's successful, then it's always morphing and getting more and more, right? So if they went to the moon, where's the morph? It's not there. Otherwise, it'd be getting better and better and better, because everything gets better and better. So therefore, that's what Prabhupada said, it failed. Like that. So therefore, one doesn't have to do that. Stick within what area you can understand, and hear from authority, hear from the Bhagavatam. Then one can understand the whole universe just sitting where you are. You don't have to go out and get yourself a fancy tin can and blow yourself into outer space. You know, didn't work out very well for one of the Chinese emperors. Like that. Yes? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana ki.